Welcome to the EV Leaders Podcast, where we dive into the electrifying world of electric vehicles, bringing you the latest trends, insights, and innovations. I'm your host, Ryan, and today we have a very special guest joining us. We're thrilled to welcome Elliot Richards, a prominent presenter at the Fully Charged show and Everything Electric. Elliot has been at the forefront of the electric vehicle revolution, providing in-depth reviews, thought leadership, and educational content on the shift to sustainable energy. In today's episode, we're going to explore the rapid advancements in EV technology, discuss the future of electric transportation, and hear Elliot's expert advice for both enthusiasts and industry professionals. Elliot, I'm so excited to welcome you on today. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to talk to you about what's happening in the EV space around the world.
And I'm excited to hear about it. And before we do that, let's talk a little bit more about the Fully Charged show. Can you kind of give us a synopsis of like what the Fully Charged is and kind of give the listeners a background of who you are?
Yeah, I mean, sure. So the Fully Charged show has been going for, I'm going to get this wrong, over 10 years, started by Robert Llewellyn, who's a presenter from the UK, used to be on Red Dwarf and Scrap Heap Challenge. So he's quite well known in the UK. And he started off by just presenting videos by himself in a small electric car. I think it was a Mitsubishi iMEV. And then it kind of snowballed from there, adding presenters, adding other team members, and then covering not just cars, but renewables, home energy. And now here we are, I think about 12 years later, and we've got presenters all around the globe. And I'm the China-based presenter, so I present what's been happening over this side of the world over the last kind of 4 or 5 years. And it's, you know, it's an area that's been growing in a lot of interest from customers and industry experts. So it's very fitting that it's become much more mainstream now. We've got over 1 million subscribers on the main channel, and we have live shows around the world. I think last year we had 6 live shows where people can come along, speak to us and see the cars and see the home energy things in real life. So it's grown into something very, very big now.
I absolutely love that. So let's talk about what's happened in the past 4 to 5 years, specifically within like the China markets. Could you share some of the most significant innovations that you guys have seen in the past like 4 to 5 years that have really excited you?
Yeah, sure. I'll try and summarize this as quickly as I can because I could talk about this for about 3 hours, and there's so much that's kind of that happened in the last 4 or 5 years. So, you know, obviously we've had COVID, but in that time, I think the China EV industry has developed at breakneck speed, and it was a really interesting phenomenon. I think it was last year at the Shanghai Auto Show in 2023. It's the first auto show China did since COVID, and it's the first time a lot of automakers had come back. Like German executives had come over and Japanese executives had come over to China for the first time in three or four years.
Yeah,
and the look on their faces was just of, oh no, we've been beaten, or, you know, they looked so defeated because China had advanced so much in the EV space in that short time. And that's kind of what's happened in China. It's just they've innovated so quickly in the battery space, in the, you know, UI, UX space in terms of cars, charging infrastructure. You know, it's just this fully developed industry that now is taking on legacy automotive, so the traditional automakers, and really giving them a run for their money, especially in China, not so much in Europe, definitely not in the US yet. But that's kind of the biggest change that's happened. And I think, and for me personally, the biggest thing that I'm excited about is the battery technology.
Yeah.
You know, so we were talking about batteries, I think 4 or 5 years ago, $150, $200 per kilowatt hour. Now we're well below $100 per kilowatt hour, which means that they're now on a price parity with internal combustion engine cars. And that price is dropping and dropping and dropping as new battery technology comes out, like sodium ion batteries, you know, made from essentially salt, which are now dropping the price even further. And I think we're going to see so much advancement in battery tech over the next few years that that's what's so significant, I think, about this shift to electric vehicles.
Interesting. What are you expecting from the battery? Let's talk about the specific battery perspective. Like, what are the shifts that you think we're going to be seeing within like the actual EV battery space?
So for me, I'm really looking forward to seeing the high density batteries. So that's not so much maybe for cars, like passenger cars.
Yeah.
But maybe for fleet, like buses and trucks, but especially airplanes. So currently I think battery capacity is around 160 watt hours per kilogram. this super high energy density batteries are about 500 watt hours per kilogram. A lot of numbers throwing out, but basically means you can have a, you know, battery which is, you know, a third of the size, you know, has so much more power. I mean, that's kind of one area. Then the other areas, like the affordability. So they've easily got rid of like cobalt from batteries now, and they're focusing on, so the sodium batteries, you know, the NCM batteries, just really dropping the price so that very soon, I think we're going to see within the next 6 to 8 months, electric cars that are cheaper to buy than internal combustion cars. And that really is the game changer, I think, in terms of people adopting EV technology. And then the other uses as well, as obviously like the home battery systems, then the price drops, the size of them drops. It just becomes something you can easily install in an hour. There's it's very wide ranging, but it all comes back to that core, which is the battery.
Interesting. Yeah, I feel like the battery is like, that's the key to like EVs, like getting over like people's perception of like, how, oh, I can't get an EV because like I'm gonna have to charge it every time I go. I want to also ask about like public perception that you've seen amongst electric vehicles in the past few years, especially within China. It's one of the largest adopters of EV vehicles across the globe. So I'm curious, like, what has your perception been on the public perception of people adopting EV vehicles?
I think there's been a huge shift in the last, say, 18 months to 2 years. Yeah. Let's talk about within China first, where the public are now much more open and willing and prepared to basically invest in these new brands with electric cars, just because it's so much more convenient. So, you know, we have very good charging infrastructure here, which helps a lot. Very few of us have home charging because we don't live in suburban houses. We all live in apartment blocks. So the charging infrastructure is really good. Then you've got the benefits of having a free number plate. So in order to drive in cities in some cities in China, you have to pay money to get a number plate to then drive your like petrol car in the city. That number plate costs £10,000, which is, I don't know, $15,000.
Wow.
Before you even bought the car, they're like, right, if you want to drive in Shanghai, you have to buy this number plate first. That's going to cost you $15,000. And so you see cars out there, you know, like a basic Nissan with a Shanghai number plate, and you think that number plate is worth more than the car. So it's kind of nuts. But with electric cars, it's completely free. So it's kind of a no-brainer. If you commute into work or you live in Shanghai, I think we're close to about 50% of cars now sold or in Shanghai are electric cars. You know, there's so much choice, you know, from the smaller $5,000-$6,000 electric cars up to the, I know, $150,000 like BYDs and stuff. So there's a lot of choice, and it's not seen as it's just kind of the natural choice for people who want to drive in China because it's just so much cheaper. I mean, gas prices are on par with the US or the UK. Actually, the UK is a bit more expensive. But your wage here is obviously a lot lower. And, you know, then you've got maintenance costs, et cetera, et cetera. And it's just, it just makes everything so much easier. And then there's much more of a greater awareness of the environmental impact of burning fossil fuels. So we had terrible pollution here, 6 or 7 years ago, very visible. You go outside your door, it's gray, it's pretty disgusting, to be honest. And people were like, well, my son or daughter's growing up in this. I don't want them to continue growing up in this environment. What can I do? So electric cars was obviously a big part of that, and the government's been pushing them as well. So perception here is it's inevitable that they're going to take over. I think very, very soon we're likely to see widespread bans on petrol cars within cities in China. It hasn't been announced yet, but I expect that to happen very soon. Outside of China, the perception is very different, almost the opposite. I mean, you've got this small core group of people who are like, yeah, we love EVs, we love, you know, Tesla or whoever it is, BYD. But then outside of that, and people who are diehard petrol heads are very resistant to the change. And I think there's it's kind of become involved in politics now. It's like a political issue, which makes it very spicy. It makes it very difficult to talk about, to have rational conversations about it. So it's much more of a divisive situation, I think. That's my impression from here in China.
Yeah.
But I think it's much more divisive, even in the US, I think, right? It's just, it's a bit of a spiky subject.
Yeah. A question that comes to mind, what does it take for like adoption in regions that aren't adopting as quickly as like China or like Norway, like some of these countries that are really adopting it? Like between charging infrastructure, like technological advances, government policies, economic factors, like what are like the two main things that a country needs to actually adopt EV vehicles? Like two of the most important things that you think?
It's the two A's, affordability and availability. So I think the problem with, so the US and Europe, for example, they're not particularly affordable, and especially if you're lower income, and there's not much availability, right? So if you go out and buy an electric car in the US now, how much choice do you have really? You know, maybe 10, 15 cars?
Not a lot.
No. And what's the lowest price? Like $20,000, $25,000?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yes. So, I mean, for people to really pick these up, they need all price categories in all sectors. So you need the super luxury ones, you need the really affordable family ones. And I think we're going to see the growth of these EVs, not so much in the US and Europe. It's going to be in places like Southeast Asia or Africa or South America. And that's where Chinese manufacturers are going in a big way at the moment. And they don't have the same brand or image issues that you know, Europeans might have with a brand from China or whatever. So I think these Chinese brands can offer that affordability, and they have the scale. We, you know, we've heard about the overcapacity. Mm-hmm. That overcapacity is going to, you know, Southeast Asia, where there's customers wanting to buy these cars. And that's where the uptake is really starting to explode. So yeah, affordability and availability is the two biggest hindrances, I think.
Yeah. And I feel like once you get beyond that, it could also then go to that, like, do you have the infrastructure in place? Are there actually charging stations that are well-equipped? And, like, can you find a charging space easy? It's a huge problem. Not a huge problem, but it's a huge solution to a huge problem, I guess, if we're looking for ways to adopt EV vehicles.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, the charging here is not perfect. I mean, there's multiple times I've turned up to a fast charger and it doesn't work, or the app doesn't work, or... you know, it's the same issues everywhere, I think. So that globally still has to improve, but we definitely have a few more charging piles here. So if that one doesn't work, there's plenty of others nearby.
I also want to look ahead here. We talked about battery technology that's going to excite you, but what are some other upcoming technological advancements in the EV industry that excite you? Is it the UX? You talked about the China. I think that's a fascinating topic, but like, what are some other advancements that really are exciting you?
It's kind of battery related, but it's the ultra fast charging. So this is like cars with 800 volt architecture or more than that. We're already seeing them on the market here in China. I think Europe's beginning to get a few cars as well. I think Lotus, for example, has the super fast charging. Basically means you can get from 20 to 80% in 15 minutes. So then you're on pretty close to getting close to equivalent to filling up your petrol car. That is only going to get quicker, and those batteries are only going to last longer. I think one of the issues now is if you keep doing those super fast charges, the battery will degrade quicker. So those super fast charging, when that gets very close to filling up an ICE car, I think that's going to be a real shift for people to move into EVs. The other area which excites me, it's probably the opposite. It's the self-driving technology. It has like you've seen from Tesla's, you know, FSD in the US and Europe, it has the potential to really transform our cities.
Mm-hmm.
So not just, you know, cars and personal cars that then you don't really need to own a car. You can just get into this personal transportation pod with no driver, or, you know, we've got driverless, taxis here in China. You've got them in the US in San Francisco. Yep. And a few other cities. But it's things like the buses or trucks here, like what do you call them in the US? Trucks? Not, I don't mean pickup trucks, the big rigs.
The semi trucks?
That's it. Semi trucks. Yeah. They have no cab, so there's no driver, but there's no cab. And so it's just this flat kind of unit with big wheels, with radars and LiDAR on the front. And those are going from a port in Shanghai to, I don't know, in the shipping area or something. It's about 30 kilometers, no drivers. And they drive in a line of about 10. And they're just driving autonomously down this road with shipping containers on the back. That's reality now. Although it doesn't personally excite me to potentially go into a future where I'm not driving a car, will become fabulously wealthy. So, which I think was why Tesla's so keen on getting out there first.
Yeah, the economic impact of driverless semis, because this is a humongous industry, logistics, transportation, that is a humongous industry. So right now in Shanghai, we definitely don't have that in the US. You guys have a driverless or like autonomous, like semi trucks right now.
Yep. Yeah, that's right. It's on a very special area. I'm not sure. I think it's a public road, but they just go up and down between the port and somewhere else with no driver. And a row of 10 of them, like the first truck, then the second truck is like a meter behind because it's ridiculous. And this has actually been on the market for 2 or 3 years. That kind of aspect of self-driving is happening very quickly. There's a lot of companies developing tech in that area.
Yeah.
And have a driverless car in a Chinese city is extremely challenging.
Oh, gosh.
There's motorbikes, there's people walking in the road, there's roadworks all the time, and it's nuts. But these cars and these systems and software can cope with it. So, yeah, it's going to have a huge impact, especially like safety and things like that. So that's going to be pretty groundbreaking over the next few years.
Elliot, I'm not going to lie, that like blows my mind that you guys truly are very much ahead of like the whole world when it comes to like EVs and autonomous vehicles. That blows my mind. I want to ask the broader role of this as well, because obviously semi trucks use like not very great for the environment. So how do you envision the role of like electric vehicles in the broader context of like sustainable living and like renewable energies? Yeah, could you share how that's going to shape cities and communities?
Yeah, so I think we're heading towards a future where, I mean, we're pretty close already, where you don't own your own car. So many people lease their cars, right?
Yeah.
And it's basically a car subscription. And we're already kind of falling into that model of having a car subscription. So maybe, you know, you have a car that you subscribe to, and perhaps it comes and picks you up from it to go to work in the morning. And it's, you know, I think we're falling kind of into that model. So as soon as you take away like car ownership,
yep,
then all of a sudden you don't need all these, you know, car park or places that you need to park your car all the time. You drop off places. But then I think it challenges the perception that you need cars in cities. And I think we're going to find out, very much like Paris, for example, they've become much more cycle friendly. And Amsterdam obviously leading the way there. And we're going to have a hybrid, I think, between electric cars, last mile mobility solutions, you know, electric scooters. It's going to be a whole kind of breadth of different transport types within the city. It's going to be much less reliant on the car. Long distance, then we think we'll probably rely on, you know, like the autonomous buses, but then, you know, rail, bullet trains, maglev, it's all technology which is here or being developed. I think maybe this is a bit of a fantasy of mine, but I think it really will begin to transform how we live and work. Obviously, a lot of us are now working remotely, so we don't need to go into office, we don't need to go into our cities. So, you know, will there be less strain on the grid? So therefore, we need to produce less power, then we can use our electric cars to power the grid. So, I mean, there's so much that could happen and so many directions it could go in. But I think we're really going to see a switch away from fossil fuels in our energy grid over the next like 15 to 20 years, especially as we start seeing V2G, which is vehicle to grid, where our cars become part of the grid. You know, if you have a million electric cars, you know, plugged into the grid, they can really start to balance that power. So yep, we don't need coal power stations as backup. There's a lot happening, and it's hard to kind of pinpoint one thing that I think is going to make a big difference. But I'm hopeful that I know I review cars a lot of the time, but I hope that we start moving away from like a car obsessed kind of lifestyle, and it can be done. So
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's like what's so exciting about the industry is like it truly feels like we're still like so young and like the capabilities of like what EVs are going to be able to do and like the technology that they have and like the true impact that they'll have on us. I think that's like one of the most exciting things about the industry.
Yeah. And I think we don't really know the impact yet. We don't know how it's going to impact our lives, but I think it will be significant, you know, like how when the internet came in, it'll be something potentially similar to that.
Yeah. Do you think it'll be something that we look back in like, you know, 2040 and we look back and be like, wow, like this is fully integrated within my lifestyle now, similar to like how the internet is?
Absolutely. Yeah. And you'll probably see it in China first or Southeast Asia first. And I think we're going to look back at the last 50 years and think, oh, we let cars with pipes on the back spew out kind of toxic smoke in front of my kids who are then breathing and walking along the street. It's going to blow our minds. And I think, how smoking is perceived now or, you know, things like that. I think we're really going to look back and think, wow, that was a strange time. But it's going to happen very quickly.
I absolutely love that. Obviously, it's going to happen quickly, but there's going to be challenges that come along the ways. So, like, what do you think some of those challenges will be over the next, 2030, 2035? What are some of those big challenges that you think will persist?
I think the biggest challenge at the moment and over the next few years is politics. Because most of the development is happening in China, solar panels, wind turbines, battery technology, EVs, it's like, oh, it's all China, 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 China. And there's a huge, perception that China's a threat, China's a risk. I can't speak for that. Who knows, right? But I think we have to disconnect politics from EVs and politics from, making our grid greener and making our lives better, because this is about, saving the planet, hopefully preventing climate change from getting any worse. It's not about, my EVs built by a Chinese company or my panels are built by a Chinese company. I think we need to move away from that. But, these perceptions really are hard to shake. So and then you obviously got the tariffs and, things like that. So I think that's the biggest challenge within the next four or five years. I think over the next kind of 10 years, it's going to be the perception of A, electric cars, and B, items from China. I think that kind of is shifting already in a lot of places, but that stands in some people's heads. I think the other biggest challenge is legacy automakers. Now, they're really, really struggling, and they're very resistant, obviously, to wanting to change because they have to shift all their production lines. They don't know what potentially they're doing. So you're going to see a lot of resistance from them, and we're going to see some of those businesses fail. In fact, just before this call, I saw VW's for the first time ever considering, I think, closing one of its factories or scaling down production in one of its factories. So they're going through a really tough time, and I don't want any business to fail, but I think the only way they can be successful is by lobbying governments to say, no, we still need internal combustion, engine cars for the next 5 or 10 years to just keep us in business. But as soon as consumer sentiment changes, then that's it. It's game over for a lot of those legacy car makers.
Yeah, I want to ask a question that comes to mind. Obviously, you have your legacy companies, and in the United States, it's like Ford. Like, that's the first one, of course, that comes to mind. But from a global perspective, like, what are like one or two or three companies that actually like do excite you? Of course, Tesla might be up there for a lot of United States people, but I'm curious of like the perspective that you have in like the EU and China and like those types of companies.
So for specifically Chinese companies, I would definitely say, obviously, BYD. I mean, from what they've been able to do, their scale, their vertical integration, it's incredible. When we toured the factory back in, 2020 or 2021, even when we filmed that episode, we had no idea that they would become the biggest, well, the second biggest automaker in the world, and so quickly, and with such high volumes of cars. And the stuff they're doing with the batteries as well, I think is absolutely groundbreaking. I'm not so sure about their hybrid strategy, like their, range extender cars, but let's see how that works out. So BYD is obviously one to look out for. Shifting away from cars, I would actually look at CATL, the battery manufacturer, the biggest battery manufacturer in the world. They've got the scale, they've got the ambition. They're in every single car, electric car brand in the world, including, I think, except BYD. So they're in your Teslas, you know, in your VWs, they're in everything. And so they have something like 1,200 PhD, not students, people who have PhDs working for them, you know, they're researching. So what's going to come out of that factory over the next kind of 5 to 10 years is going to be very interesting. They're hopefully going to release that sodium battery, I think, this year, which I'm very excited to hear more about. So those are kind of the two big companies I'm most excited about. And I think they're probably going to make the biggest difference. Then there's probably a self-driving company who are going to be very successful. I cannot pinpoint one at the moment. It's all very much, everyone's kind of at the same level.
Yeah.
XPeng have their own self-driving system, which is very good. NIO have their own one, again, very good. Huawei, again, have their own one. Again, I've been told it's very good. So no one's a standout winner at the moment. But yeah, those are kind of the three areas that I keep my eye on, that automaker, those batteries and self-driving technology.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with the self-driving technology. Anyways, here in the United States, there's like two that comes to mind is like Waymo and Cruise, and they both are like still like the testing phase of it. And it's not clear like who, in my mind anyway, like who the absolute winner is. But like there are obviously like Tesla's the leader here in like the EV vehicles and everything. So I think it's always interesting that autonomous vehicle technology is insane to talk about and even to think about what it'll do.
Yeah.
I want to pivot to our last segment here. This practical advice for people that do want to get started with like EV vehicles. So for someone that is considering their first electric vehicle, what are the key factors they should look for when making their decision into buying a car?
Yeah, this is I saw this question. I was like, oh gosh, this is very difficult. I'm going to say the obvious one. So the first one is going to be charging. Can you charge at home? If not, do you have fast chargers nearby? That's probably the biggest barrier that you're going to have to owning an electric car and then enjoying an electric car. If you're always stressing out about where to charge it or you don't have chargers at work, it's probably not going to be for you just yet. Specs are not important, which is kind of an odd thing to say, but like horsepower, range, like they all have really good acceleration. Some have insane levels of acceleration.
Yeah.
And some have okay, but they're all very fast and feel fun like on the road, right?
Yeah.
Even a Nissan Leaf can be fun. So I would say things like horsepower, things like that are just not important. Range also is less important. Most cars have 200 to 300 miles or kilometers of range now. I think the biggest thing you need to look out for is the company stable.
Mm.
Is the hardware and software future-proof?
Mm.
Because we have all seen over the last few months Fisker. So if you bought a Fisker, great. Well, I think it's a pretty good car. I've never driven it myself, but it looks good. But now what happens? How do you update it? Like, how do you get parts for it? And the situation in China is that, but times four or five. There's four or five companies here which have gone bust.
Yeah.
And the users are finding the app now no longer works. They can't unlock their car. They can't turn on the radio, they can't use navigation. And so I'd really actually look into that company. You know, do you really think they're going to, it's hard to predict obviously, but do you really think they're going to be here for the next 5 to 10 years? And then are they equipped to be able to update software? So someone like Tesla, yes, very good at that. But then hardware as well. I know NIO here in China, they offer hardware upgrades. So if you bought the original NIO ES8, came out in 2018. As far as I know, you can upgrade the hardware behind the screen. So if it comes a bit slow and laggy, if you want it to last for the next kind of 5 years, you know, improve efficiency of the motors, et cetera, you can actually upgrade the hardware for a few thousand dollars. So I think it's thinking about how future-proof those vehicles are. I definitely wouldn't worry about battery health. If you're buying a new car, don't worry about that, but if you're buying secondhand, see if you can get an inspection on the battery health, because obviously that's quite important.
I love that. And going right off the opposite end of that question, like what are some of the common misconceptions about electric vehicles that you kind of want to debunk about it based on like your experience with the fully charged show?
Yeah. Number one would be not enough range. Electric cars are, my parents have said this, they said it can't fit our lifestyle. You know, we don't think it's got enough range and not enough charge in the UK. And I'm like, guys, it's the UK. What? It's only about 500 miles long. So anyway, electric cars have more than enough range. The infrastructure is decent enough in the UK, and I think even in the US, that you can, I mean, you need to stop after 2 hours to go to the toilet. And now you have this ultra rapid charging of, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes. It becomes so much less of an issue. So I think the range thing is a non-issue, especially not an issue here in China. I think Europe, in some areas, it still may be a bit more of a sore point. But I think range, don't worry about it. The other one is people's perception of Chinese EVs. Polestar, it's a Chinese EV, right? People haven't really had any issues with that so far. So I think the quality thing is just nonsense. And I just encourage people to try one. You know, get into a Polestar whilst you still can before the tariffs come in. You know, Teslas are made in China, not the ones that go to the US. Try it, see what it's like. You know, most people, if you've got an iPhone or an Android phone, that's also made in China. So the quality is much less of an issue now. And the last one I hear a lot, misconceptions, is, oh, your batteries are dirty. They've got cobalt in them. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not good for the environment. I encourage those people to do some real desktop research. There's lots of very good papers and even just articles about the truth behind that. There is very little cobalt in batteries now. Most batteries here now are cobalt free. CATL are actually developing a battery passport. So the car you buy with that battery has a battery passport. It's basically a book which says,
yep,
your battery has these materials in it. These materials have come from here, here, and here. We use this much CO2, and this is how we've offset it. So you can actually kind of see where your battery is from. And I think that's going to become a lot more important when buying a car, is seeing that your battery, you know, doesn't come with cobalt, doesn't, you know, damage the environment.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we've got, you know, things like battery recycling coming up. You can recycle 99.5% of a electric car battery, whereas an ICE car, you can't recycle any of that petrol. It's used once and then that's it. Cobalt is still used in oil refining. You know, there's so many arguments here, but
yeah,
I
yeah.
encourage people to do that and to do their research. You know, visit Fully Charged Show website and many other places to look at some of those myths.
Absolutely. You have done a research within the EV space. You are obviously like so plugged in. You're well researched. You know your facts. You know the data, all that stuff. So just last question for you. Like, what are some of those best practices you would recommend for staying up to date with all of everything that's happening within the EV industry?
I would say absorb all media from everywhere, not just from the West. I know it's quite difficult, you know, to say that, but you know, sometimes there's an agenda or a bias. You know, every media has this in every country. But, you know, open your mind to, you know, what's happening in China. Come to China. See for yourself, you know, the number of EVs on the road. And educate yourself about, you know, what's happening here, what impact that will have around the world. I think that's the best way of being in front of what's happening in the EV space. Just visit China. Get in touch with people, myself, you know. There's plenty of us here, and actually, you know, sit down and talk to us and learn about what's going on, or listen to podcasts like this. It's all about talking, having those conversations with people, and seeking to understand, you know, really what's going on.
Well, that, and if people are like, oh my gosh, well, I want you to be a resource for you, and I want to ask you a question, where can people learn more about you and connect with you?
Multiple places. Probably the best place to start is my own website. It's just elliottreese.com. I've got a DM link on there, or you can contact me on Threads, Elliot Reese, I think, or Elliot Richards. And you can find me on LinkedIn. That's probably the best place. Just Elliot Richards, you'll find me. I've got a yellow picture. And then I produce content for the Fully Charged Show and my own YouTube channel, Elliot Richards on EVs. Contact me on any of those. Write me a comment. Send me a DM. I'm happy to speak to anyone.
You are the absolute best, Elliot. I want to thank you so much for sharing your expertise and passion with us today. And to our listeners, if you enjoyed this episode, make sure to follow the EV Leaders podcast and stay tuned for more deep dives into the world of electric vehicles. Don't forget to check out the Fully Charged show as well for amazing content. Until next time, I am Ryan, and this has been the EV Leaders podcast. Keep driving towards a greener future.